You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. To find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, go to our website, kfuo.org, and look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section there. Today, we're talking with a student from Concordia Seminary via Skype. We're talking with Christopher Conkling. He's studying internationally, studying at Westfield House in Cambridge. Christopher, welcome to Faith and Family.
Hey, good afternoon. Thank you for having me on.
Glad to have a chance to talk with you today and learn about your formation as a seminary student and a future pastor as well. What led you to consider studying at seminary in this pastoral formation?
Well, to make a long story short, I think a lot of it really started with influence from both my family and my friends. I started studying political science at Concordia University, Chicago. I was doing international relations, and I started that my junior year when I transferred there from Concordia Bronxville, and I really enjoyed it. But I realized that it wasn't quite the vocation that the Lord was calling me to. And through a lot of prayer and a lot of encouragement, the Lord used my friends and family to show me that He was leading me toward ministry. And it was something that was quite nerve-wracking at first, but it turned out to be a wonderful decision, and it's something that I would never consider otherwise again.
Before you enrolled at the seminary, what did you think seminary education would be like? What did you picture it to be before you became a student?
I apologize, repeat the question.
Before you enrolled to be a student at the seminary, what did you picture seminary education to be like? What did you picture seminary life to be like?
Well, my father is a Missouri Senate pastor, and so really it was kind of through the lens of what he did. My father's a little more of an academic than I am. He has his PhD, and so it was a lot of reading, a lot of sermon writing, as I thought when I was quite young, spending maybe 8 to 10 hours on it. And for me at first, it actually kind of turned me away from it a bit, because I realized I wasn't quite like him in that sense. I didn't quite have the gifts that he did. And it was really having those other gifts be revealed to me through other people. People showing me different things that pastoral ministry is actually the way God uses you and what he gave you to serve the church, to serve him and community. And so for me, it's a lot more hands-on, a lot more practical, not as much having my head in a book 24/7. And he also lectures. So those kinds of things. So I realized the way he kind of did pastoral ministry initially was my initial focus or my initial understanding of it. But it turns out to be quite different for each individual.
Who did you anticipate would be your classmates? What did you think your class would look like? Where would the students be from?
Well, also I kind of had an image of that from when my father was in seminary. I was just a young little boy when he started. So I really pictured the guys coming, you know, from all over the country, maybe a few people internationally, from Africa, some maybe from Eastern Asia, those kinds of places. And I figured a lot of guys would be second career. They were just a hunch, you know, and many would be married. And that actually did wind up being the case. Most of my class, I could say a little over half of them are indeed married, are second career, and there's quite a gap in age between us. But nevertheless, they are absolutely wonderful people, and they treat me, you know, as an equal, as a student, and I'm very thankful for that.
When did you learn about the opportunity to study abroad as a seminary student?
Well, the program was introduced to me when at Concordia Bronxville, before I was even a student. I was aware that a number of Concordias in their undergraduate programs were sending students to this place in Westfield House, called Westfield House, across the pond in England. And to me, it was kind of a novelty at first. But then I learned after starting college that seminary students got to do it for a full year, whereas undergraduate students just did one term at Cambridge through Westfield House. And so it was really when I was in high school that was first introduced to me. But I never really considered the program until maybe a year ago now.
And what convinced you to consider the program?
Well, a lot of it had to do, of course, with prayer, but also more practically, it had to do with circumstance. I figured, you know, that since I'm single at this point, I don't have a family that would create visa problems. I also have a financial position right now that allows me to do this, and also I've always wanted to go to England. My mother's from Germany, born and raised, and we've gone to mainland Europe quite a bit. But England was always a place we just never quite made it to. And I'm very familiar with the English culture just through reading books and through listening to the infamous choirs from the various cathedrals and colleges around Cambridge and Oxford. And that was something I wanted to see firsthand. That was a big push. But also it was the opportunity to study with some of the academic faculty here and some of the tutors at Westfield House who not only have a great grasp on theology of Luther, but also other guys. So you get a little bit of a different understanding of Luther from people who aren't Lutheran. And it's interesting to hear outside perspectives as well. And so all of that together was very encouraging to come here.
Absolutely. Tell me about how the experience has gone for you as a student at Westfield House. What are the experiences you're having there that are really key to pastoral formation?
Well, for one of the major things is really humility. And what I mean by that is coming here, you can only anticipate what you're getting yourself into. When I first arrived at Heathrow Airport in London, I had a contact from one of my schools who wound up being a student with me at Westfield House. And all I knew was in Cambridge, which was a 2-hour taxi ride away. And getting here, I just didn't know what to expect. And sure enough, when you live by yourself, really for the first time on your own, and also abroad in a different country with a different currency, a different understanding, certain things you use in America don't work in Britain. And so I'd say humility was one. You know, you come in thinking you understand the way it works. You also think you have a very good grasp on things such as theology as well. But then when you come to Cambridge and you realize how much people who aren't even Lutheran know about the Lutheran faith, and in fact, things you don't even know about, it humbles you very quickly. And in a very positive way too, in a way that teaches you that you have so much to learn, and it really motivates you to study and to really look at, you know, more into the theology that you know, this genius theology of Martin Luther. And in a more practical aspect, I've had the opportunity to volunteer with a group in Cambridge called Christian Heritage, and they operate out of a building called the Round Church, which was built by returning crusaders from Jerusalem in the 12th century. Very old building. And it's now a hub for kind of showing the gospel in around Europe, and especially in Cambridge, because Cambridge is such a rich Christian history that a lot of people in and around Cambridge do not really seem to understand. Christianity does not have the positive connotation in England and even in Cambridge, where there's this misconception that science, you know, rules the day and God and science are not compatible. And so this organization has done a lot, not only some apologetic work, but also just walking with people and being there for people who have questions about Christianity. And it's really helped me, you know, not necessarily thinking I have all the right answers for people's questions, but really showing me what it is to spread the gospel and what it is, you know, to be kind of that light in a world of darkness. And it's been very exciting. It's something that I really enjoy.
Tell me about some of the people you've met while studying at Westfield House in Cambridge.
Well, I guess I'll begin with Westfield House itself. Westfield House is a manor that was that the Church of England acquired, and that is the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England, which is the church body here that we operate out of. So probably the first and foremost people here in this house that have influenced me are the tutors. And the tutors are the ones who are lecture at the house. And those are the ones to whom I'm doing my classes with seminary. One of them, his name is Dr. Boris Gunjevic. He's from Croatia. And he's one of our tutors here. And he is an Augustine scholar, and he's taught me, he and I have done a confession, worked through Augustine's confessions together as kind of a devotional, reading it, and he's really opened my eyes to what it is, you know, growing spiritually, what it is to live, you know, in this state of Christianity, and how we share that with other people, because Augustine really seemed to have a grasp on that.
So those you're studying with, certainly it's been a unique experience that you, I'm sure, didn't find here in the United States. Well, it's a good experience of studying with the professors here at the seminary in the United States. It's something unique that you get to experience there in Cambridge.
Well, a lot of them would, there are definitely seminary who really, who know a lot of these things, but again, they've had a very different experience too as to how the gospel has shaped them, and also kind of where their expertise are. In Cambridge too, not only do we have the tutors here who are very influential, but we also have the divinity faculty, which is the way it works in Cambridge is you have 31 colleges that comprise the University Federation of Cambridge, and they're spread all over the city, and the faculty are various members of each college, and each faculty has their own individual building at a location in Cambridge, which is the university site. And so we go for two different types of lectures, and at the Divinity Faculty, there are some wonderful guys there. They aren't really Lutheran. They are, most of them who are Christian, they are either Church of England, they are Catholic. Some may be a more familiar Protestant American to us. There are a lot of Americans who lecture there as well, but they also have a very unique take and the way they do scripture, that we, it's not necessarily a hermeneutical method, but understandings or things they point out based on their theological understandings. The Church of England goes off the 39 Articles, whereas we go off of the unaltered Augsburg Confession. And they highlight things about maybe the way they read Paul, the way they might see Christ in a different light, and whether or not in the end I agree with it, it really gives you another perspective that you might not get at Concordia Seminary, just because we just don't have that other perspective available. And so it's been very eye-opening, very enlightening, and it's nice to kind of understand these other views on something, you know, that we hold, whereas we hold Christ, you know, as our God, but just a different way of perceiving it. So I'm very grateful for that opportunity.
Tell me about some of the other students at Westfield House.
Well, so we have at Westfield an undergraduate and a graduate program, the graduate program, of course, being for seminarians. And the undergraduate is with the various Concordias universities that I mentioned earlier. Right now, this is the first year that Westfield House has done what's called the Concordia University Irvine program, which is goes by Cambridge Corps. So last term we had, trying to think, about 12 students, maybe more, who were living with us and studying with us at Westfield House as undergraduate students. And this term there's only four. But the seminarians, as I stated earlier, we're here the entire year. And there's five seminarians total. There's four of us that live in the house, and one lives in a flat. But we all take classes together. The seminarians have a little bit of a different schedule set up. And for that, we don't always have classes with the undergraduate students, but there are some where we mix classes. But all of us do have lectures at the Divinity faculty. The undergraduate students are from all over the place, and they're all really wonderful people. They contribute to the conversation. And and living with them, we live in a large house behind Westfield House called Luther Hall. And it is I've had the opportunity to learn from them different recipes, how to cook, and also just interest, getting to know people. It's been quite the adventure.
Tell me about your experience with students that you studied with there at Westfield House. As I understand it, you had a great experience with a student last term.
Yes, there is. So some of we've had students, particularly at Westfield House, we do have two students from abroad this term. One is Pastor Jonathan Danko, who's from Ghana, and he was recently ordained. And he's a wonderful guy to talk with, and I've gotten to know him quite well. And but last term, I had a roommate who is from Madagascar. His name is Solotiana Rajanaravello, which is quite the name. Took me a little bit to remember that. And he is just a wonderful man. He was headmaster at a Lutheran school in Madagascar. And he came to Westfield House kind of to learn more various methods on Lutheran education, trying to find new methods just for studying. But I had the privilege of being a roommate with him and getting to know his story. And it turns out that even though the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's not in fellowship with the Lutheran Church of Madagascar, there is a lot of connection between the two, because the Lutheran Church of Madagascar is a confessional church, and the LCMS has done projects with them. And it turns out that the LCMS has helped out with building a hospital in the city that Solotiana is from. And the school, on the other hand, as I got to know him better, Solo was his short name, we found out that his school was having a lot of structural problems. It needed a new roof. There were windows broken, chalkboards needed to be replaced. And Solotiana and I had the opportunity to work together to get a draft not a contract, but basically all the resources together in a proposal to figure out, to bring before the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, the Office of International Relations, and they've been very helpful with giving resources to help contribute money toward his school. And as we speak, they are doing construction on the school, and we'll be sending pictures and results. And Solotiana and I are still in contact, and it's great to hear from him. And that was quite the experience. But in terms of students who are in Cambridge, Cambridge is a very international city, just as London is, just as Oxford is. The larger university cities in the UK tend to be very international. There are quite a number of Americans here. But the ones who I spend time with, usually the students are at the Round Church, or the place I volunteer, and and we have opportunities to go to the pub, share a drink, talking about theology, or just kind of about how things are going, learning about each other's faith, how we came to our Christian faith, which is always an interesting story, because the way God works is just in there are ways that you just can't predict, ways that just they don't seem they should happen. And those have been wonderful opportunities for me to connect with people. I also have the chance to connect with students from Australia, and they are located at other theological houses around Cambridge, who and they tend to have either a Church of England background, but kind of a lower church, more conservative background. So we find we share a lot of theology, and we have a chance to talk. And I see them at divinity faculties or at lectures, and we have wonderful conversations. And it turns out that actually one of the houses here, I believe it's called Ridley Hall, they use our Concordia commentary series, which has been put out by various LCMS theologians. And that's very encouraging to hear. The Concordia Seminary is actually pretty well known in Cambridge among certain members of the divinity faculty. And there's also, they also have a good respect for the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, and also people who are not from Cambridge, who are international of other cultures, they're also aware of it too. And so that's very, very encouraging to learn that.
How would you say your experience at Westfield House with the students, the faculty, and the community and the culture, how have all these things shaped your formation for becoming a pastor?
Well, really, of course, again, apart from prayer, it's just been a lot of listening, for one, and a lot of opportunities to spend time with the people here, whether it's going for coffee or a drink or just really working together, studying together, these opportunities, and also just meeting people who you wouldn't expect, people who just happen to come along. They really teach you a lot about yourself. You realize that a lot of experiences that you go through, somebody else has had some of them too, particularly maybe struggle with their faith, things going on in their lives, opportunities and past experiences. And it's also just seeing God's grace working in my life. You know, there's a lot of times here where I realized that things weren't quite going the way I thought they would. But it turns out the way that I wanted them to go probably wasn't the best way anyway. And these people that have been put in my life here in Cambridge, also the way things actually turn out are usually better than the way I wanted them. And for that, I'm very thankful. And it's been such a learning experience here. As I said before, it was a lot of humility, learning from other people who know things and who have had experiences you can never imagine. And also learning the various theological perspectives you might not hear otherwise. And really understanding faith backgrounds. And also just even Lutherans in other cultures, learning how the Lutheran Church, maybe in Ghana, how they operate, how they function, the mission work they do. And these are all, and you hear very positive things, particularly with Ghana, the church growing there. And it's very encouraging. And for all of this, it's just honestly Thanksgiving. It's harder to put in other words.
How might you speak to a prospective student, a student who's considering seminary and thinking about the option of studying abroad in Cambridge? What might you share with them about your experience that may or may not influence their decision to study abroad?
Well, I would certainly tell them, just based on my time here now, if you do choose to go to seminary, do study abroad. If the opportunity is there, take it. You may never get the chance again. It is a wonderful year of growth, a year of learning, a year of learning that you still have a lot to learn, But it's also just a chance to watch the Lord work in your life in ways that you just would never expect. The relationships that are built, the friendships, and just also the different perspectives. But in terms of someone considering seminary in the first place, that is indeed a very serious call. It is something, you know, that you don't just take lightly. It is when the Lord calls you to serve His church, it is not only an honor, but it is something that you, that's just eye-opening. It is something that's very humbling, but also something very joyful. It is something that, honestly, the opportunity to share the gospel is something that wakes me up every day. And that's something I probably would have never imagined before I considered seminary. And for someone considering it, I encourage every young man in all of our Lutheran schools and our various churches just to think about it. Whether or not that is their gift, whether or not the Lord is calling them to that, I understand. Not everybody has that ability, those talents, those gifts. But you know what? It's something that we need. Our church body is definitely in need of young men who are considering the ministry. And for those who choose to answer that call, or where the Lord moves them to answer that call, it's just, it'll be a wonderful adventure, one with just constant growth and constant thanksgiving. And that's the most I can say there.
Our guest today, seminarian Christopher Conkling, studying with Concordia Seminary at Westfield House in Cambridge in the United Kingdom. Thank you so much for being our guest today, Christopher. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you. Likewise.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
If I were a pro-abortion activist, I'd be seriously depressed. During the last 5 years, states have passed nearly 300 pro-life laws. This isn't some Pollyanna pro-life report. It comes from the Pro-Abortion Guttmacher Institute, first established as the research arm of Planned Parenthood. People often ask me if I'm optimistic we'll end abortion, and I respond with a big smile and enthusiasm. Yes, I am. The hundreds of pro-life laws are just one of many reasons why. It's been a long, hard battle, which I've been active in for over 40 years. Make no mistake, we've got lots of work ahead. But you and I can be encouraged, very encouraged, that one day all babies will be safe from the violence of abortion. Almost sounds like a little piece of heaven, doesn't it?
Follow us on Twitter at Life Issues USA and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Did you know that when Martin Luther appeared at the Diet of Worms and said, "Here I stand," he had already been excommunicated from the church? Wednesday on Issues Etc., we'll continue our weekly series with Dr. Ken Sherb on Martin Luther and the Reformation.
Issues Etc., live weekday afternoons from 3 to 5 on KFUO.
We read in Acts 1:8, "You will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the end of the earth." This month, the LCMS focuses on international witness as we partner with our brothers and sisters around the world in carrying Christ's rich gifts to the ends of the earth. There's more online at lcms.org/focus/international-witness.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates, and we are talking about education today, lifelong learning opportunities. So great to talk with Christopher Conkling, in a Concordia Seminary student studying at Westfield House in Cambridge. Joining me now in studio, friends from the Consortium for Classical Lutheran Education, returning to Faith and Family, headmaster from Messiah Lutheran Classical Academy in Keller, Texas, Mrs. Erica Mildred. Welcome back to Faith and Family.
Thank you, Andy.
Always glad to have a chance to talk about CCLE with you and what's going on at Messiah as well. And joining us also in studio today, Sarah Schultz. She's a deaconess intern at Messiah Lutheran Classical Academy in Keller, Texas, and with CCLE. Sarah, welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here, and welcome to your first time here on Faith and Family and KFUO.
It's exciting.
Dr. James Tallman, he's the headmaster at Trinity Lutheran School in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and teaches 7th and 8th grade there as well. Dr. Tallman, welcome to Faith and Family.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Welcome to St. Louis, too, for those of you coming to St. Louis for the CCLE meeting here in St. Louis. And I gather you're preparing for the next CCLE conference. Is that right, Erica?
We are. CCLE 16 is going to be this July, the 19th through the 21st, at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. We're excited to be going back there. They hosted us a few years back. And our theme for the conference is Pedagogy of Goodness. We're focusing on that kind of triple thing we talk about in classical education a lot, the good, the true, and the beautiful. We did a pedagogy of beauty last year, and we'll wrap up with CCLE 17 next year with the pedagogy of truth. So very excited to be kind of having that three-year series that we're working on right now.
What is goodness? What is the pedagogy of good? Goodness? What are we going to be talking about at this conference? Dr. Tallman, you want to address some of that?
Sure, I'll do that. It's multifaceted. Goodness will pertain to the pedagogy that results in helping form good character in the students, and also an appreciation, an ear for, and an eye for beauty, and that helps a person participate in the good. And also it has to do with the strategies that the teachers utilize that help make them more able to connect the dots for their students to see the unity of knowledge and to excel in the liberal arts.
I guess we're all educators in this room and probably talking shop when we say pedagogy. We should probably break that down or explain that a little bit. What does that mean, Erica?
Pedagogy is kind of that category of learning or knowledge that we talk about. It kind of shapes, it flows from the philosophy, and then it kind of shapes the methodology. So it's kind of the strategy or the unfolding of education shaped by philosophy. And really, we all have it, all educators, whether you're talking about classical education or another venue of education. So, you know, what shapes your worldview, what shapes your understanding of education, and then how to pragmatically put it forth in a meaningful way for students.
If I could piggyback, sure. It's also it's not the content of the education, it's how teachers teach.
And why is that significant? How teachers teach, why is that important?
Well, really, that is the heart of what then gets produced, put forth in front of students. We need to look at what level of learning they are in. That's kind of how the trivium shapes us, where their brain is going. We need to make sure that we are intentional about what we teach and why we're teaching it, why we know that this is the way a student will learn this material best. And then it does also shape how we select what we're teaching. What is, and that goes back to our theme of the conference, what is good? What are those kernels in every subject that students must know, need to know, not just for their educational life, but also to shape and transform them in their Christian life as well.
Sarah, deaconess intern at Messiah Lutheran Church and Classical Academy there in Keller, Texas. Tell us, what was your experience with classical education before coming to Messiah?
Well, I'm actually a complete neophyte when it comes to classical education. My interest began to grow when I was up at Seward because, of course, it was, you know, the teacher's college, and so I was always rubbing shoulders with a bunch of educators. And then going to the seminary and delving into, that was really my first introduction into ancient authors, in large part with the church fathers. And then I read some more philosophy, got a little more into, you know, good old Plato and all of them. And the whole philosophy of just of classical education appeals to me because it's not concerned just with material facts that you're putting into somebody's brain so that they can do, you know, menial life labors, but it's shaping the entire person. It's making a human being out of a child. And so that holistic focus, it's entirely Christian. It's what every Christian should be doing with their children.
So tell me about your work. What are you doing? What are you learning on your internship at Messiah?
Oh, my goodness. It could fill so many books. Messiah has been wonderful. I'm a music teacher from all the way down to 2 years old, all the way up through high school. So it runs quite a gamut. At Seward, I was a parish music major, so I know how to play organ, at least decently enough for chapel. So we begin every day at chapel. I play the organ, and then we'll go into different classes with the preschoolers. We're doing a lot of just music appreciation, a lot of singing, folk songs, hymns, liturgy. They have the liturgy memorized so well. It's wonderful to hear their voices floating above everyone, even at church. With a lot of the middle grades, we're doing piano lessons. They're learning really well on that. And we have handbells and some other classes incorporated for our high schoolers. So,
what's it like working with, when you learned that you would be working with scholars at the age of two?
Oh my goodness. I had no idea. I was looking around at church and I was asking someone next to me, so is this one a two-year-old? Like, I don't know how tall these ones are. It's been great, though. I adore the children. They're wonderful. It's great to interact with them and to help mold and shape them.
Dr. Tallman, tell me a little bit about Trinity in Cheyenne and your work there as headmaster and teaching 7th and 8th grade.
Yeah, it's really been quite a switch from my lifelong career as a public school professor. And then I did work in a private school at Patrick Henry College in Virginia for 6 years prior to coming. But my work with the Consortium for Classical Lutheran Education led me to be increasingly dissatisfied with being an ivory tower person trying to tell people in the trenches how to teach about pedagogy. And so I decided that I really needed to go in the trenches and work with a parish school to help them achieve their full potential and find out what it's really like. And teaching 7th and 8th grade for 3 years now has really been, at first, a real culture shock for me, but a real delight because I actually prefer working with students this age because they're so much more impressionable and open to learning and enthused about knowledge. A lot of the college kids tend to think that they know everything. So it's really a treat working with them. And what we do a lot, I'm a speech person by trade. I'm a rhetorician, which is the art of persuasive speaking and debate and that sort of thing. So I teach them the principles of argumentation. I teach them how to both create vivid imagery in the minds of the audience and logic, of course, how to recognize a fallacy when they see one and that sort of thing. So putting it together to learn to appeal both to imagination and to reason, the head and the heart, and learning how to do those things has really been well received by the students, and it's been a lot of fun. And of course, I went there because I wanted to take a school that was kind of ready to go to the next level. They adopted classical education about 10 years ago, and they've just been kind of doing what they learned in the early years, and now we're taking it to the next level. In fact, my staff is working, doing committee work on a bunch of goals that we set out to actually take the school to the next level. So it's really been a joy. I love it.
And Erica, I think it's been a while since we've talked about your work at Messiah Lutheran Classical Academy in Keller, Texas. And I think in our last conversation, we talked about your students being scholars.
Yes.
And how that makes a difference in the classroom for the students and when they're addressed as scholars. How are things going at for the scholars at Messiah today?
Today and this year, we're just continuing on that path. We just finished, like so many Lutheran schools did this last week, celebrating National mm-hmm. Lutheran Schools Week together. On Wednesday, we took our oldest scholars on a short jaunt down to Plano, Texas, and we had our annual Latin Day with another classical Lutheran school. And from our scholars singing for them a five declension song. It lasted about 5 minutes, and they went through all of the endings of all five declensions in Latin, to some gladiator games, to a short scene from the Nike. We just had a lot of fun celebrating the Latin language and ancient Roman culture. Mm-hmm. And so there's, I think, as Dr. Tallman said, there's a lot of fun that goes mm-hmm. into this kind of education. It's vibrant. It's alive. At the grammar level, their brains are so well developed to memorize. They can memorize copious amounts of material. And so when you give them the great things to memorize, and you give them things that shape not just their mind, but their heart, but also lay that foundation for later when they are ready to start taking it to the next level in their years of logic and rhetoric at those middle and high school years, it's just such a gift. It's such a treasure to give them. They don't realize it at the time. They're just having fun singing their fun songs and jingles and chants, but you're giving them a gift that will last a lifetime. And I think that's what's most exciting for me about the classical education movement is the treasure that you're giving children and setting them up for the rest of their lives to be lifelong mm-hmm. scholars, and also to have within them that firm foundation of their faith. And they walk through their day, you know, singing those hymns or saying their Bible verses. Of course, I'm out of town right now. I spoke to my daughter this morning and asked her if she was going to work hard today. And our theme verse for this year is from Colossians, "Whatever you do, work heartily, as for the Lord and not for men." And I reminded her of that, and she immediately broke into song that was written by one of our teachers, our fourth grade teacher this year. And she just sang the whole verse. And so just that idea of putting those important things, those truths, those good things of life into their hearts, into their minds, and allowing that to create that firm foundation for their faith and for their educational careers. Mm-hmm. There's not many more things that are exciting to me than that.
Now, Messiah is, how long has Messiah been a school?
It was founded in 1999, so mm-hmm. we're in our either 16th or 17th year, we've grown slowly over mm-hmm. the years. Even prior to that, it was a preschool. We still have our preschool program, and we've added ninth grade, and God willing, and you know, mm-hmm. as long as we are blessed with the students to keep going, our goal is to go all the way through the years of rhetoric and see this through 12th grade for families in our area.
Wow, what's the highest grade you have students in right now?
Ninth grade.
So the, ninth graders, that's great. Mm-hmm. And do the, you mentioned having a preschool, do the preschoolers start learning Latin?
You know, informally they do. And not just Latin, but sign language. As it turns out, yeah. our Latin scholar, Pastor Cholak, is also mm-hmm. completely fluent in American Sign Language. And so our kids are just showered with it. It's just mm-hmm. this exposure, this layering. They don't study it officially until third grade is when we start learning the mm-hmm. grammar and the mechanics of it. And I could go on for a long time about the importance of that and how wonderful that is for students of English to learn that as a language. But even in the preschool years, they're saying salve and vale and calling their teacher discipula, or Pastor Cholak they call pastor, because it's just a little bit different pronunciation in Latin. So yes, they're being exposed to it. It's that exposure, that showering of mm-hmm. just kind of a part of our culture at Messiah, how we talk.
Why is, Dr. Tallman, why is Latin central to, why is it key to classical education? How is it valuable today? Some might ask, some might say, well, I hear that it's a dead language. Why sure. is why is classical education, why is Latin key to classical
That's
education?
That's a terrific question, and it gets right down to the value of classical or traditional liberal arts education and its relevance. And I'm a dangerous person to ask a question like that, because it's hard for me to just focus on one easy answer. But the bottom line is that the Western tradition is so steeped in Latin, that the language permeates medical discourse. Mm-hmm. It permeates, you know, I think everybody understands that the syntax you learn from Latin, from studying Latin, applies to a lot of things, so that educated people are familiar with those phrases. That's really a minor aspect of it. In the grammar phase, which is, you know, the people still call elementary school grammar school in some cases, and so we're familiar with that vestige of the mm-hmm. tradition. But in that phase of learning, children learn basic parts of knowledge. And the grammar that you learn in order to learn Latin not only equips you to learn languages later in life, but it equips you, it helps order your mind so that you're equipped for learning in general. So the ordering of the mind that takes place through Latin studies is really important as well. But the heritage, the Septuagint, the Vulgate, the knowing those languages helps you access seminal works in Western history, mm-hmm. And in our theology and our faith tradition as well. One extended point, classical liberal arts learning is the kind of learning that is the bequeath of the Reformation fathers to the Western world. And it's based on Greco-Roman learning, okay? And I think that the longer I'm involved in this movement, the more I realize that learning in a traditional liberal arts way was important to Bugenhagen and Luther and Sturm and Melanchthon, because they understood that in order to embrace a liturgical, sacramental, confessional, and creedal faith, mm-hmm. you needed to have a certain kind of intellectual equipment just in order to really get it. So if you look at the Small Catechism of Luther, for example, it is a grammar because it has six chief parts. It's articulated rhetorically, what does this mean? This is most certainly true. That repetition and the use of couplets is a rhetorical structure that's also arranged dialectically. The contrast between in the explanations between the what you should do and what you should not do. Mm-hmm. So that, not just the Latin, but the whole basis of traditional liberal arts learning equips our students to think in such a way that they have ears to hear and eyes to see the kind of truth we believe, teach, and confess.
How does CCLE serve schools, serve educators, serve families?
What a great question. We are constantly looking to grow, improve, and develop in that area. We like Messiah, actually were founded right around 1999, so we have not been an organization that long, but that is kind of what we want CCLE to be about, is serving families, serving homeschool educators, serving classical Lutheran day schools, serving classical Lutheran teachers in their endeavors in revitalizing this movement in Lutheranism here in America. And the basic ways that we have found to be of service to those groups and communities is through our website, first of all. We have just posted on there a video that we produced this summer for those who are new to and kind of wondering, what is classical Lutheran education? I've heard of it, but what is it? And what does the CCLE do? And how do they help with this? Mm-hmm. The website's ccle.org, and the video is on there. We also serve schools, classical Lutheran schools, in the accreditation process. We partner with NLSA to provide a co-accreditation process so that we can specifically look at that classical Lutheran component alongside what NLSA looks at. And we have 10 schools nationwide that are accredited by the CCLE. We also have just rolled out a classical teacher education certification program. So many of our teachers in our Lutheran day schools, many of them are colloquied, many have come from our Concordias, others have come from other walks of life and have been colloquied into the program. But the area that we saw that we could serve kind of a niche or a hole, you know, that would be to help with that certification process for those teachers that want to learn more about the pedagogy and the methodology of classical education. You do not have to teach at a classical school to be a classical educator. And so you can take the learning about the methodology and the nuts and bolts and how to take this kind of learning and put it into your classroom and really see it in action and touch the lives of students. So we are working with teachers who are interested in that certification process as well. So we also have that summer conference. Again, it's a time every summer for us to get together, to collaborate, to share our wisdom, to share with one another strategies on continuing this movement and keeping it moving in the right direction for our Lutheran schools and homeschools.
Who will be at the conference this coming July?
We are still working on some of the some of that in subcommittee, but we have many of our CCLE board of directors, including Dr. Jean Veith, who will be there and leading sessions. Dr. Tallman is going to be presenting several in the areas of rhetoric that he is very diverse and well spoken on, as you've already heard. Since we are going to be at one of the Fort Wayne at the Fort Wayne Seminary, we are reaching out to professors there who can help us with, especially because of the theme of the conference being a pedagogy of good. There is going to be a heavy emphasis on that theological nature of
Christian
the good. Right. Dr. Kopf, has already agreed to come.
Professor Ashman from Irvine.
From Concordia Irvine will be there. He'll be our plenary speaker. So we're going to have a great lineup. And this spring is when that all kind of comes together. And there will be registration information soon on our website. But right now we just kind of are at the save the date and note the location. And we hope to see many in Fort Wayne.
July 19th through the 21st. Is that right?
That's correct.
And that'll be in Fort Wayne, Indiana, at Concordia Theological Seminary. The website, ccle.org, is the place to find more information. I love the new artwork on there. The is that an acorn?
It is.
With Luther Seal? I love it. That's great. So go check it out, and you can see the new artwork on the page as well. I love it. And learn more about A Pedagogy of Goodness coming up this summer in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Thank you all for being my guest today and sharing some time with me, sharing about your experience teaching and learning more about classical Lutheran education. Sarah Schultz, intern, deaconess intern at Messiah Lutheran Classical Academy in Keller, Texas. Thanks for being our guest today.
Thank you.
And Mrs. Erica Mildred, thanks so much for being our guest, serving as headmaster at Messiah Lutheran Classical Academy in Keller as well. Thanks for being here today.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, Andy.
And Dr. James Tallman, headmaster and teaches 7th and 8th grade at Trinity Lutheran School in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Thanks for being our guest today.
Thank you.
Coming up in just a little bit, Thy Strong Word, studying God's Word with Pastor William Whedon here at Worldwide KFUO.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.